You're listening to the Save the Marriage Podcast. Your marriage can be saved and strengthened if you have the right information. Join Dr. Lee Baucom as he explores ways for you to improve your relationship and your life, starting right now.
If your marriage has been ruptured by infidelity, you probably are the same place I am, where you realize just how much of our culture has become centered around kind of romanticizing infidelity. This is Lee Baucom, and today on the Save the Marriage podcast, I want to talk about what fuels that relationship. Why is it so intense? Why does it burn so hot? But, you know, when we're surrounded by that, it can often leave us with these very difficult questions to ask, like, is it possible to avoid infidelity? And it absolutely is. But more than that, it brings the question of why it happens. And I've talked about that in other podcasts, about the fact that when there's a lack of connection, it puts a relationship at risk. And when there are lack of boundaries around the relationship, then there's even a higher level of risk. The real issue, though, of what happens in the relationships is how intense that relationship becomes, how intense the infidelity becomes. And sometimes it becomes very confusing for both the people who are involved in the infidelity and the person who is hurt by that infidelity. In other words, the spouse who has had that infidelity against them. And at this point, I'm talking about any infidelity, any affair, whether it's emotional or physical, but understand that the physical element certainly adds a lot of fuel to that fire. To me, it's almost like a rocket fuel, that it burns so heavy, so hot, and it's so explosive that that's why it's so difficult for us to understand what's going on. You know, in a lot of ways, we understand that we get stuck in this world of explanation. And so today I want to talk some about how to understand why it is such a strong force and why it ends up being such a rationalized issue, and in some ways we can deal with that. Okay, this is kind of a mindset piece. I always talk about whether this is a kind of a tactical piece of what to do or a mindset piece of how to understand. And today it's a little both, but it's a lot of mindset around infidelity. So if your relationship has been rocked by infidelity, whether it's physical affairs or emotional affairs, then this is going to really apply. Now, I do want to make a little disclaimer here. We're going to talk some more about emotional affairs and emotional infidelity down the road, because it's such a difficult thing to define. So I will make a disclaimer that you may have a spouse that you are sure is having an emotional affair and they refuse to say they are. Well, this is still going to apply, but recognize that it's a little harder to get that understanding across because of the denial mechanisms that happen in an emotional affair. You know, when we talk about a physical affair, it suddenly becomes very clear, because there's physical contact. And what amounts to crossing that line, you know, in my mind, there is that place from emotional to physical that simply when it goes from sharing one's inner life to a physical connection of some sort. So even if it's making out, there is a level there of infidelity all the way to the point of sexual acts. And let's face it, any physical contact is headed towards a sexual contact. And so while it may not end there, you know, while some couples involved in an affair will stop at kissing or making out or other contact, they may never get to intercourse. And that kind of makes it confusing for people because we have a difficult time defining that barrier. So I just want to draw that line today between the point when it goes from an emotional connection to a physical connection is simply that point we're talking about when I talk about physical affairs. But recognize that this energy, the power around an affair, happens in both. And I've watched this time and time again where people have come into my office. I remember one couple that came in my office and you know, they couldn't figure out why he couldn't break away from the affair. He wanted so badly to end that relationship, and yet he found himself drawn back into phone calls, drawn back into illicit meetings. And so it was as if he could not get away from it, and it's because of the power of this. And so as I've talked to couple after couple, there is a common theme of what fuels it. And I want to use the acronym so you can easily remember what is fueling this affair. And the acronym I want to use is FALSE. FALSE, because it's not real stuff, but it feels that way. So the F is for fantasy. One of the huge pieces of an affair is the fact that it's based in a fantasy life. It's not based in reality. It's not based in raising children and getting up in the morning and getting ready for work and struggling through seeing each other, you know, at our worst moments when we're exhausted. But it's built in a fantasy life of getting all cleaned up, of getting dressed, of, you know, meeting somewhere interesting and creating almost a fantasy of that other person. In fact, most of the time, it's very much a fantasy of the other person. And people will rationalize that it's not true, that they really know that other person, but they're not seeing them in any other context than this fantasy arrangement. And so when that happens, we build in lots of story, right, of imagination of what happens in that. And so humans like two things at the same time. We like to have something we can count on, and we like variety. And those are two human forces of liking sameness and variety at the same time. Well, this fantasy often steps in when somebody's feeling like there's not a lot of variety in life. And that's part of what ends up being kind of a standout. You know, your spouse is at home, and you're seeing your spouse when your spouse is not cleaned up, and when your spouse has bad breath, and your spouse is sick, and when the kids are grumpy, and when the job's not going well. And that's one little story to tell. And then there's this other of this other person, the fantasy life that goes on. And so the F part of FALSE is this strong layer of fantasy that is existing in the relationship. It's not about knowing someone on a day-to-day life. It's about living a fantasy world. And, you know, if you watch what happens on TV, and I've watched a number of reality TV shows that are around dating and courtship, and you'll notice that they put those couples in fantasy places because they know that fantasy draws out passion. These interesting places and beautiful surroundings and out of our normal day creates this place of upping the level of attraction between two people. Which leads us to the second part. It also ups the adrenaline and the adrenaline attraction. Now, whenever we talk about infatuation, adrenaline is always a part of that. So the A in FALSE is adrenaline attraction. And that adrenaline attraction is always based in a piece of that excitement, right? And the excitement drives us towards something. And adrenaline, as you probably are well aware, is a very addictive substance that we create in our own body. You know, that same adrenaline charge you watch adrenaline junkies go after is the same adrenaline that fuels the fire of these affairs. Now, adrenaline is always the beginning point of a relationship. You know, when we're in an infatuation level, it's always about adrenaline. And I want to draw one very important distinction about adrenaline. Adrenaline always has a level of fear, a layer of fear to it, whether that fear is of getting caught or whether that fear is because you're breaking your values and your norms or whether it's based in a fear of losing that other person. There is a fear level that fuels that. Now, that's as opposed to what happens when we actually fall in love. And we switch from our adrenaline factor to an endorphin tractor. Adrenaline attraction is always based in getting that charge. And so whenever we're away, we're pining for that other person, pining for that hit of adrenaline and probably worried a little bit that other person is, you know, maybe finding someone else attractive. That's what happens in the early stages of any relationship. We get that charge out of being with them and we wonder what's going on with them when they're apart. That's also true in an affair. But as we fall in love, we switch over to the endorphin levels in our body. Now, endorphins make us feel good, but without that fear. And endorphins are triggered when we do loving things. Adrenaline is triggered when we get what we want, when we're going after something, when we're grabbing something, when we're getting our charge. Endorphins are activated when we're giving our love. And so that difference is one of the clear distinctions between a loving, long-lasting relationship and what happens in an affair. So we have that fantasy world that helps us fuel our adrenaline, that's also based in a place of lostness. That sometimes it's about a person feeling lost in life and trying to find their way through. And so you find a lot of the moments of an affair erupting is when somebody is feeling particularly lost. Maybe their relationship is not clicking the way they want it to. You know, the connection's not there. Or maybe their job's not satisfying and they're not sure what to do next. Or maybe the kids are getting to a new place in life and you're not sure what that next chapter brings. And so that feeling of lostness gets treated by finding this other person and losing yourself to that relationship. That helps boost along the affair. So if things are not going well in an area of life, if you're feeling kind of lost or somebody's feeling kind of lost and stuck, then the affair comes along and can kind of alleviate that pain. It doesn't mean that it was meant to be, and it doesn't mean that it's the perfect relationship, and it doesn't mean any of the other rationalizations that happen. It's a way that somebody has treated that feeling of lost. Now, lost is one of the central features of the feeling of a midlife crisis. In a midlife crisis, people feel lost. They don't know what to do next, don't know where to go, don't know how to find meaning, and so they're trying to find something that'll stop that feeling of lostness, that feeling of emptiness. And the affair can be that place for them, not in a healthy way, but it leads to a place of distraction from that lost feeling. And so the lostness of life often finds its salve in an affair and in a very inappropriate ways, but that's part of what kind of fuels it. Now, the next one is a powerful fuel of an affair, and that's secrecy. Secrecy is one of the biggest fuels of an affair. Now, whenever you can't tell people about what you're doing, you can probably guess that you shouldn't be doing it. And that's true with an affair. People don't usually announce to the world that they're having an affair, that they're cheating on a spouse. And that secrecy really fuels the other pieces. You know, the secrecy creates more of a fantasy life, and the secrecy draws out that adrenaline charge, because when you're having to keep secrets, there's a fear level to it. What happens if you're discovered? And so the secrecy piece pops up, and you watch people go to great extents to hide things. They have hidden phones and they have hidden places of communication. And, you know, I've noticed how many ways people can use technology now to escape being noticed. And what that does is it fuels secrecy, which fuels the affair. And so there's a back and forth play as the secrecy continues to allow it to expand. You know, one of the things that often happens in an affair is when it's discovered, it begins to fall apart on its own, just because that secrecy is punctured and it takes away something of the belief, the self rationalization that nobody's getting hurt by this, that it's okay. And suddenly that comes crashing down when the other person knows about it, when a spouse learns about it. But it also destroys the secrecy level of this. There's this song that you might remember from the 80s. Secret Lover. It is probably my all-time least favorite song. In fact, when it comes on, I turn off the radio. There's one station that I quit listening to because they played it too often, and another one I actually complained to and asked them to take it off, because all it does is glorify that level of infidelity. It makes it as if that secret lover thing is okay. It somehow has approval that you're having to put up with day-to-day life, and the way to do that is by having this little secret on the side. The secrecy eats away at all the other relationships. You begin to work very hard to hold on to that, and as we all know, once you start telling a lie, it spins out to lie after lie after lie to cover the first lie, and suddenly you're lost in the dishonesty. You're lost in the secrecy that comes with that dishonesty, and pretty quickly that spirals into this powerful link between two peoples. When people are holding secrets together, it bonds them in ways that are very dangerous, at least outside of the bounds of a real relationship. And I say a real relationship because the majority of affairs do not last. The majority of affairs fall apart at some point, if for no other reason than the people involved in the affair realize that there is a dishonesty to the relationship and they can't even trust the person with whom they're cheating because that person would cheat. And so they fall on themselves over that. And so as I've watched affair after affair, often they begin to self-implode from this layer of recognizing at some point the dishonesty that's involved. I've told this story before, but I had a couple that was in my office, and they were together because they had both cheated on their spouses. Then they had gotten married, and here they were once again in trouble. The man had once again cheated, and the woman made the comment to me that she should have known that if he would cheat on her, on his first wife, he would cheat on her. That if he would be dishonest once, he could potentially do it again. And she knew that because she had been a part of the relationship that came out of that dishonesty, came out of that secrecy. And what had happened was she had rationalized that they were the right match. It's not very typical, if almost ever happens, that an affair really puts two people together into a healthy relationship. And in fact, I would tell you that as many people as have claimed that to me, that has not ever panned out. That they rarely find someone healthy in this process of infidelity. And so the health of the relationship is already at risk. So the secrecy just kind of fuels it and throws gas on the flame and gives it more and more energy, which leads us to the last piece, the ego. And the ego is what really it fans the flames, because the ego is about what I want, right? And so somebody is getting an ego charge out of the fact that somebody wants them so much. I mean, that is a huge part of what fuels the affair, is this feeling of being wanted. And it often comes, as I said earlier, from the disconnection in the relationship leading to there being kind of an Achilles heel there. A wound there that's not getting treated in the relationship. And so they're looking somewhere for an ego boost. We watch time after time affairs develop at nodal turns in life, nodal events. For instance, one risk point is when a couple is expecting or has a young child, because suddenly the attention of the couple ends up being focused on that child, and that can be an ego bruise. Or when a child goes off to school, that can be an ego bruise of not knowing what the role is in life. Or when the kids go off to college, the ego bruise is not knowing what to do next. Or when there's a job problem. And when your job's not going well, somebody's job ends up kind of flaming out or is stuck, there can be an ego bruise to that, and somebody might go looking for an ego stroke, a way of feeling better about things. And so the ego gets involved in that. Love is not about ego. Love is about caring and attending for the other person. An affair is about the ego and getting what you want. And so even the acts of what looks like love that happen in infidelity really are about maintaining and keeping that person around to make sure that it's an ego stroke, to make sure that it continues to fuel that pattern. So there you have the fuels of infidelity: fantasy, adrenaline attraction, the lost feeling, the secrecy that's built up, and the ego stroke that comes about that. So what that tells you is what it's not about. It's really not about that other person. It's not about the person with whom somebody's having an affair. That person becomes an object, and often a projection of what they want. So they imagine certain traits on that other person, and they begin to be able to kind of take subconscious or unconscious material and try to make that person into what they want them to be. Even if it's not at all true, they become an object of infatuation. And by the way, that brings up the point that it's not about love. It truly is about infatuation. Now, all relationships start at infatuation. Some make it to love. The problem with an affair is the infatuation is rooted in such dishonesty and secrecy and adrenaline that it rarely has any chance of moving beyond that. back to that whole level of recognizing that a relationship is based in dishonesty begins to eat away at the foundations of that very relationship. So very few affairs can make it very long into real life because they've already got the danger points built into them at the bottom. Also, it's not about life. You know, as I said, this is not a lifelong thing, and so it's not about real life. The escapism that happens in infidelity is incredible, where people go to great lengths to sneak around and see this person. That's not real life. That's not day-to-day life. That's created in a fantasy life that is not sustainable and, in the end, not particularly fulfilling. It might meet a need here or there, but it can't meet all of the needs that are necessary in a relationship. It gets wrecked by that. And the last thing it's not about honesty. No matter how many times I've heard two people involved in infidelity tell me that they are 100% honest with each other, they are not rooted in honesty. They are outside of their values, which leads us to what the problem is. Human wiring is always for connection. We desperately want to be connected to another person in deep, intimate ways. And so when we're looking for that connection, sometimes the wires get crossed up. And so when we connect with someone that it's inappropriate, we instead of wanting to admit to that, often it leads to rationalization of emotions and actions. Somehow you've got to make that make sense. It's well known in the marketing world and in the psychology world that people make non-rational, emotional, and primitive decisions, and then they back it up with reasons to justify it. We don't set out to make a reasoned decision. We always are setting out, we believe we're making a reasoned decision, but it's always ruled by that non-rational, emotional, and primitive choice. Let me give you a couple of real-world examples. If you look outside and look at what you're driving, unless you're driving the most basic car that will get you from here to there, and even a car might be a step up, but the most basic level of transportation that will get you effectively from place to place, if you do not have that, you have made an emotional decision. Because a vehicle, the only thing it's necessary for is to get you from point A to point B. Everything else is all about these wants. Not needs, but wants and justifications. And so anytime that there is a car with more than the very basic, and I include my car in that, you know, when I look at that, I go, well, I didn't get the most basic model, right? I didn't get everything, but I didn't get the most basic model. And so I made a non-rational decision. Or let's use another example. This was pointed out to me at a conference, and the person said, look down at your wrist and look at the watch that's on your arm. Is it a Timex? Because if it's not a cheap $12 Timex, you have made a non-rational decision in your purchase. Because all you need a watch for is to tell time. That's all it would do. So when I look on my watch is a dive watch. My dive watch will tell me the water temperature. It tells me how deep I've gone, how long I've been underwater, and lots of other cool facts. But the fact is, I also carry a computer with me that's connected to my tank that also tells me how long I've been under, how long I can stay under, what the temperature is, and all the other things that are on my wrist. When I bought that watch, I made an emotional decision and then backed it up with a rationalization that I need to know those things when I'm diving. But what it really does is when I look down, it reminds me of diving. It reminds me of my love of scuba diving. And so in that way, it's an irrational decision. It's an emotional decision because it's tying me to something else. That's the nature of humans. We make irrational decisions or non-rational decisions that are often based in some emotion somewhere in the back that are also very primitive. And then we spend our time justifying that behavior. This is true in affairs. Affairs happen for non-rational decisions. And the drive to have sex with somebody else is a primitive decision. And then we spend our time trying to justify it, try to find rational reasons instead of recognizing that all that's happened is we've allowed our emotive, primitive side to take over the sensible side. We've allowed that place of fantasy, of adrenaline, of maybe feeling lost and holding on to secrets and needing an ego stroke to lead us to a place of dishonesty and of danger for the relationship, and then try to make sense of why that makes sense. So now you know what causes that rocket fuel. Now you also know kind of what happens in the process. And if you're the person who has suffered the affair, recognize that it is not about you, that anytime you try to do and how do I compare to this other person, it is not about that, because it's not about the other person. That other person is an object, is a projection of your spouse's imagination and other pieces. And if you have an affair, recognize that you have been caught up in that process, and that that process is rarely going to go to a healthy place, because it starts with a values violation. I have very few people who can tell me on a rational moment that affairs make sense and that affairs are okay. And yet we know that many, many people commit affairs. Many people who are good and decent people who then spend their time living in fantasy, driven by adrenaline, because they're trying to deal with that lost feeling. Then they create secrets that lead further down that road, all at the same time trying to get an ego boost. That's a quick look in the mirror or look through the window, whether you're having an affair or whether you are dealing with a spouse with an affair. And I hope that gives you some mindset of what's going on. And I hope that gives you some ideas of what that fuel is about, and the fact that rocket fuel does burn out. It burns hot, but it burns out. And hopefully that'll give you a place of moving through. We'll be back in future podcasts to talk about emotional affairs. And if you haven't already, there are a couple of other podcasts that you want to look at. If you will do a search on the blog, you will find two podcasts about affairs. Just type in affair in the search window. One is designed for if you've had an affair, and the other is designed for if you've suffered an affair. And then there's one other about why sex is so important in a marriage, and you can find that by typing in sex and marriage, and that will take you to that one, and that will give you a lot of good places to build a foundation for how to recover after infidelity. This is Lee Balcom wishing you the best as you continue to work to save your marriage.
You've been listening to Save the Marriage Podcast. For more information and help, please visit us at SaveTheMarriage.com.